Hare Krishna and good morning to you all. Hare Krishna. Today is a very good day. Every day in Krishna consciousness is a very good day, but today is a especially good day because it is the day when we remember Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, whose one and only photograph is displayed here alongside Srila Prabhupada. This is the only photograph that was ever taken. He would not allow anyone to take his photograph. It's the only photograph that exists. So I would like to say something with your permission and blessings about his holy life and why he occupies such an important position in our disciplic succession, because on these days, in particular, by meditating on the qualities of the holy person, the spiritual teacher in the disciplic succession, we can begin to understand two things. One is just how devoted they were to Krishna, and how we can perhaps follow them so that we can become devoted to Krishna, because we are known as devotees. Devotees, if you look it up in the dictionary, means a person who has no other interest. No other interest. If I'm devoted to something, that's it. From the moment I wake up in the morning to the moment I go to sleep at night, I think about this. Prabhupada has said, being a devotee of Krishna, or Krishna consciousness, means four things. What did he say? He said, always think of Krishna, become Krishna's devotee, worship Krishna, and bow down. Offer your obeisances to Krishna. He said, this is Krishna consciousness. So it's quite simple. But it's hard, isn't it? How can something so simple be so hard? If you're sitting at a dinner table and someone says something simple like, can you pass the salt, please? It's a very simple thing. You just reach out and pass the salt. But if someone says, this is all you have to do, always think of Krishna. It's very easy. Just do it. As people have on their t-shirts these days, just do it. Just do it. But it is not that simple to always think of Krishna. Why? Because I like to think of me. And you like to think of you. And together, we don't like to think of Krishna. If I think of you, I'm thinking, what can you do for me? And sometimes if you think of me, you're thinking, what can he do for me? So first of all, we only think of ourselves. And when we think of each other, we think of each other in terms of what they can do for me. And in this way, we are not Krishna-centered, we are self-centered. And therefore, we're not Krishna-conscious, we are self-conscious. Now, sometimes people say, how can you possibly be Krishna-conscious all the time? Because we have to eat, we have to sleep, right? We have to shave, but not in a Kalashi. We have to go shopping. We have a career. We have to do so many things in which our mind will be taken off Krishna. Now, someone came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada had asked him to build a temple. He came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, ever since you asked me to build a temple, I can't think of Krishna at all. I can only think of cement and bricks and building schedules and building supplies. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is Krishna consciousness. Because what you're doing is building a temple for Krishna. Then another time, a lady came to him and said, since I've had my baby, I'm only thinking of my baby. I can't do any deity worship. So Prabhupada said, your deity is your baby, or your baby is your deity for now. But you have to build things in Krishna consciousness. You have to look after children in Krishna consciousness. What does that mean? I'm doing this for Krishna. Now, because we can't do that a lot of the time, and because the world is very distracting, and even though you try to be Krishna consciousness, your mother does not want you to be in Krishna consciousness. You see? Your father may not want you to be in Krishna consciousness. Your wife or your husband may not really want you to be Krishna conscious all the time. So what to do? So the path of becoming Krishna conscious, traditionally, has meant retiring from family life. Retiring from worldly career. Retiring from people who would cause you not to think of Krishna. Of course, that is not the problem. The problem is us, that we don't think of Krishna. And we like to blame it on others, don't we? We like to say, I would be Krishna conscious. Sometimes people say, I'd be Krishna conscious if only it wasn't for my job. If only it wasn't for my kids. I'd be really Krishna conscious. You should see me. I could really be Krishna conscious except for my wife. I could really be Krishna conscious except for my husband. You know, I could really be Krishna conscious except for my job. You see? Sometimes people say, you know, I could really be Krishna conscious if it wasn't for ISKCON. I could really be Krishna conscious, but it's just living in this temple. People say that to me. I could really be Krishna conscious if I wasn't living in the temple. You see. You test me. You see. But actually the only obstacle to becoming Krishna conscious is our lack of thinking of Krishna, worshipping Krishna, bowing down to Krishna. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, is meant as a dialogue that shows us that there's no obstacle to Krishna consciousness at all if you want it. You see? If you want it. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said that detachment comes looking for that person who has fixed their intention on becoming Krishna conscious. He said, detachment comes looking for people like that. And when she finds a person like that, she sits with you. So Mother Detachment will sit with you and look after you nicely if you declare, if you make that firm resolution, that sankalpa, I want to be a devotee of Krishna and nothing else. But oh dear, it's the and nothing else that's the problem. I want to be a devotee of Krishna, but I just want this, just when I've finish this, just when I finish that. I just got to do this, I've just got to do that. So traditionally, the path of Krishna consciousness means help yourself by retiring. At least this is what we see. And if you look at the path of our gurus in Krishna consciousness, if you go back up the chain of gurus, not in the modern day movement, let's say, but you'll either see sannyasis or you'll see people who were detached somewhat. Now, this has got nothing to do with our essential theology of Krishna consciousness, because our theology says that you can, like Arjuna, be in the midst of worldly affairs and yet be detached. You can be like the lotus. You can all, when the water of the pond rises up, the lotus also rises up. So if the lotus is 2 inches above the pond, when there is, only half of the pond is filled with water, when the pond is filled with water by the rains, the lotus will still be 2 inches above the, because the lotus has a fixed position. So if the mind is like a lotus, only to be enjoyed by the honeybee of Krishna, then the lotus of the mind will always be above the worldly troubles. But it's not that easy. It's not that easy. So therefore, Krishna consciousness has always been accompanied by some sort of practical detachment from the worldly affairs in order to give that the mind and consciousness and our heart enough chance to find Krishna in our daily life. So that's why people, when they're young, they go to live in an ashram. And that's why people, when they're old, they go to live in an ashram. And that's why people, when they're somewhere in between, they go on pilgrimage, during which time they will live in an ashram for some time. That's why people do Ramadan. Muslims do Ramadan. So during that month, you give yourself an extra opportunity to remember God. Because it's God that wants you to fast all day. Certainly, you do not want to fast all day and observe Ramadan. But because God wants you to do it, every time you don't eat, you will think, God wants me to do this. Allahu Akbar. So that month gives you an opportunity. So for the Hindu, it is the month of Kartika. For ordinary people who don't do a lot, then the month of Damodar, month of Kartik, you will find that they do more. Or every 3 years, the period of Purushottam, Purushottam Mass. We do something extra. Or 5 days at the end of Kartik, Bhishma Panchika. Some time is set aside for the cultivation of deeper spirituality. Yes, we do something every day. But sometime we take our life and we put it on hold a little bit. And we do what the Christians call finding sanctuary. Finding a place where we can just step off the treadmill. So going on pilgrimage is a little bit like that. For a number of years, I was taking people to India. And this particular time, I took the manager of a supermarket, an Englishman. Manager of a whole big, you know, not a supermarket, but a, you know, one of these huge football field size, two football fields, Asda. Now, an Englishman who wanted to come to India. So I took him to India. And on the second day in Vrindavan, he saw a group of people all queuing up to get water from one tap. And they had no shoes, very simple clothes, and they were living in tents. And he just stood there, second day in India, and he had tears in his eyes to see the poverty of India for the first time. And he'd never seen poor people like this before. He'd been used to, you know, living in a rich town and having people fill up their supermarket trolleys. This was what his life was all about. You come to my place, the place that I manage, and I'll fill up your supermarket trolley. That's my job. So he used to see the happy people and people at the checkout counter with lots of groceries. And here were some poor people. He'd never seen poor people like that before. And I went over him, and as I'm a rather affectionate person, I put my arm around his shoulder and I said, Steve, don't worry. And then I started laughing. And he turned to me and he was very confused. Why did Kripa Moya, who was a nice person taking him to India for a month, why was he laughing at the situation? He said, Kripa Moya, I don't know how you're probably thinking it's their karma or something. He said, but I can't see things like you can. Well, why are you laughing? I said, Steve, these people, they've got more money than you. He said, I know, because I'd already spoken to them. These were Marwaris from Mumbai, who were coming on a two-week tour of the holy places. And the only reason that they didn't have shoes was because they'd taken off their alligator skin boots and left them in Mumbai. And they'd stepped away from their Mercedes-Benz, top of the range, and they'd stepped away from their servants and their their rich surroundings and indoor swimming pools, to come to Vrindavan to get a bit of spirituality. So I explained this all to Steve, and he blinked and he dried his eyes up. I said, Steve, what they're doing is called vairagya. It's called detachment, you see. They know that they're rich, and they know that their money and their nicely decorated wives and happy children going to university and, in Oxford. I say they know that these things are a source of attachment for them. And so therefore they are cultivating detachment. You see? And he said, oh. So this is what the life of Gaurakishore Das Babaji is about. Vairagya. A life of detachment. not just for 2 weeks, not just for a month, and not just for a few years, 2, 3, 4 years that we spend in the ashram, but for the rest of his life. Okay. Interested? Interested? Okay. So what can we learn from his life? Well, what we can learn from his life is, I have to tell you right at the very beginning, he might be a person that you would find difficulty meeting. I'm not actually sure that Gaurakishore Das Babaji would fit into modern ISKCON. He wouldn't be the all-merciful, all-compassionate ISKCON guru that asks you with a smile how you are, and you tell him how you are, and then you see him. No. He said things that are really, really, really difficult for his disciples and followers to hear. And that's the difficulty, that sometimes when we look up at our Acharya Parampara, we think, Prabhupada, yeah, I like him. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, yeah, I like him. Who's that again? Who's that one? What was his name? Yeah. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I like him. Jagannath Das Babaji, yeah, he's kind of interesting. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, what did he do? What did he say? Where did he live? Oh, I'm not too sure about him. Secretly, we think, oh, I'm not too sure if I like him. I like the other ones, because they were preachers. Or they said nice things. But Gaurakishore Das Babaji, sometimes the more you get into his life, the more difficult it is to accept what he's, because he spoke from the plane of detachment to unsettle people's attachments. And practically everybody had attachments. So everybody that came to him, he felt duty-bound to say something to them to unsettle them just a little bit. Unfortunately, my dear friends, this is the job of the guru. You see? He says nice things to encourage you. That is the hand inside the pot. Huh? He says things that challenge you. That is the hammer outside the pot, making the pot into a nice round pot. Both hands have to work at molding you into be the perfect devotee that he wants you to be. But it seems that the most memorable stories are those stories of Gaurakishore Das Babaji when he said extremely challenging things to people. And of course, his whole life is challenging, you see. Where does having a nice Diwali with sweets and fireworks fit into the life of Gaurakishore Das Babaji? Where does having a Sunday feast fit into the life of Gaurakishore Das Babaji? Where does it all fit in? So sometimes it's difficult for us to see our life in terms of the life that he was shaping. And yet, the very Hare Krishna movement that was created by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, under the guidance of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, had its very seed in the life of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. How could it not have? Because he was the very guru of Prabhupada's guru. This is very interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Das Babaji, their lives were completely different. And sometimes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he was, I won't say confused, but he was deliberating at least on what to do, because he had two different examples of a guru set before him. One was his father. Okay, how many children? Huh? 11 children. Okay, sometimes I hear 12, 13, goes on. So, 11 children. Okay? So many children, very much, you could say, externally, a worldly life, very much working in the world, householder, dealing with powerful people, politicians, the British, you see, dealing with women. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, preaching. He started 500 sanghas in his life. You see? You see, in London we have how many? 30 sanghas. 30 years, 30 sanghas. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, 25 years, 500 sanghas. And some of them are still going today. You can still go to the Namahata groups that were started by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he was the king of outreach. You see? Gorkishordas Babaji, how many groups did he start? None. How many books did he write? None. So why then was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati asked by his father, you get initiated by this person? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was 1900. He was a young man. He was highly decorated with educational qualifications. And he said, why? My father wants me to get initiated by this person. This person can't even... I'm a highly educated student from Calcutta. This person cannot even write his name. You see? But then his father said, no, you get initiated by him or you don't come back to this house. Now in the West, if a father says that, what does the young man do? He goes on the dole, lives off the government, then finds a flat, gets housing benefit, also from the government, okay? Unfortunately, that will not be the case this time. You see, but in India, if your father says to you, you do this or you do not come back to this house, this is a very serious thing, isn't it? If your father said to you, you don't come back to this house. So he had to take it very seriously. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Getting ahead of myself. So we read about Gorkishore Das Babaji, and we should be interested, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very interested in the life of Gorkishore Das Babaji, and so was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Now, he was, various descriptions have him as being born in the middle of the 1800s. Some say 1830, some say 1838. You'll read different descriptions. He was married. Young. His wife died when he was 30, but he was living the life of a grain merchant. He was a grain agent, actually. He would take the grain from the farmers and, sell it to different parties. So this was his life. His wife died, and he saw that as an opportunity to go to Vrindavan. He was born in what's now a place near... It was called Vigyan or Vigyaya, near a place called Faridapur, which is now in Bangladesh. But he went from there to Vrindavan, to Govardhan, and he met with different Babajis. Now, sometimes we are a little suspicious of Babajis because we don't follow that line ourselves, but the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time, middle of the 1800s, was represented by persons who had retired from the world, were living in the holy place, and were basically chanting at least 64 rounds every day. And so these were the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You could not find anybody in the middle of the 1800s or late 1800s wearing orange cloth or with a sannyas robes, sannyas danda, who would teach you about Krishna consciousness. It hadn't been invented yet. If you wanted that sort of person, you would go to Udupi, where the followers of Madhvacharya were there, or you would go to Srirangam, the capital city of the Sri Vaishnavas, but you would not find Gaudiya Vaishnavas with the... In fact, Sanatan Goswami had said, one who takes up this orange cloth, the only result will be that his pride will increase. This is the six Goswamis. He's one of the six Goswamis. He's saying if you wear orange cloth, your pride will increase. Oh, what are we going to do? So, in the disciplic successions coming from the Panchatattva and from the six Goswamis, and there were different disciplic successions, as like a forest of disciplic successions. They all came in different disciplic successions just to make things complicated. From our point of view, we have one disciplic succession going from Prabhupada back to Lord Krishna. And when you really examine it, you will find a forest of different disciplic successions in which our 32, 33 names zigzag, from this branch to this branch to this branch. So Not that that matters to us, that disciplic succession has been established by Baladeva Vidyabhushan and reasserted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati after him. And of course, he wrote that song, Krishna Hoite Chaturmukha, Hoi Krishna Sevan Mukha. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati describing our Guru Parampara. So this is what we meditate on, that line of gurus. That, of course, Gaurakishore Das Babaji was not initiated by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He was not initiated by Jagannath Das Babaji, but he was initiated by Bhagavat Das Babaji, who is a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji. Where is Bhagavat Das Babaji in our disciplic succession? Gone. He's gone. He's been airbrushed out. We don't know why. We don't know why. Anyway, there are stories, but we don't know why. So in this way, the disciplic session that we have is our meditation on the teaching of pure Gauranga Bhakti. Not just devotion to Krishna, but pure devotion to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's nothing wrong in that. So this is how we trace the line of pure devotional service in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But there were not always, there was no traveling sannyasis, there was no institution, there was no movement to join. These days, I've just been to India for 3 weeks, and I remember a time when I used to tell people, with great pride, I used to say, and do you know, we have almost 20 branches of ISKCON in India, all over India. And their eyes used to go like that, you know, meaning that very authentic movement, even the Indians are taking up Krishna consciousness along the lines of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, etc., etc. Now, you know how many branches of ISKCON there are in India? Big and small. 72. 72 branches we have. Practically speaking, everyone in India, it's a phenomenon. Everyone in India has either seen a television program about us, heard our name, which they always go, oh, Hari Ram, Hari Krishna, or they've heard of the ISKCON midday meals program, or they've seen Abhay Charan on the television, or they've seen some stolen BBT art, or they've seen our devotees doing what other speakers on Krishna, whose names I will not mention, but they're very famous, and they can fill a big tent in Wembley every year or two. They say that anyone who goes on Harinam is behaving incorrectly because they are taking their deepest religious feelings and they're putting them on show. You see? So this is what we are up against. We have a Gujarati community in London, and on one hand they're going to listen to someone who says, do not go on Harinam Sankirtan. And on the other hand, we have ISKCON who's saying, do go on Harinam Sankirtan. So there's a tug of war going on between these theological principles. Who do you think is winning? I'll leave that for your meditation. So here is this huge movement called ISKCON, which you've heard of, and you go any branch of Hari Ram, Hari Krishna, and you know that you will be dealt with at least hospitably. There will be some prasad. The deity worship will be wonderful. There will at least be some kirtan going on. And someone like me or like you will be sitting on a cushion giving a talk. This is a standard that you expect. In Gaurakishore Das Babaji's time, you could not find that. You had to go and find your Babaji. This is how you became Krishna conscious. Huh? No tape recordings. Not that many books. If there were books, they were badly printed on really rubbish paper. Okay? And you had to find an assembly of people. Okay, now that assembly of people would be just two or three people with a Babaji in the forest, because he didn't want to live with a Babaji people. There was no mutt system. The Buddhists and the Shankaracharya people, they had the big ashrams and the big mutts. The other people who had the big mutts were the Sufi-influenced Sahaja groups. And at the time of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, there were 13 such groups. 13 such groups. So even if you did want to become Krishna conscious and you went to a holy place, the likelihood is that first of all you would meet with owls, bowls, sahajyas, kartabhajyas, sakibekis, chudadaris, all these different groups, kartabhajyas. Did I mention kartabhajyas? Which means ritviks. Same philosophy, actually. So it was a confusion. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji, once he visited three Babajis whose name I forget, and then he came to associate with Jagannath Das Babaji and his dear disciple Bhagavat Das Babaji, and he took initiation from him. So then he was living in different places. He lived in Navadvip, the home of Lord Chaitanya. He lived in a place called Kulia. He lived in the appearance place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Yogapith. He lived in over where Sukhada Kunj, over where Bhaktivinoda Thakur started his house. He lived in these different places. But his life was one of extreme renunciation. For eating, just a little bit of rice that he got by begging, and sometimes mixed with a little mud from the Ganges river, sometimes. Sometimes he ate rice with a little bit of banana flour vegetable on top, and sometimes he dressed in the cloth that was left behind after a body had been brought to the burning ghats. He would take that cotton cloth, he would wash it out, and he would dress in that cloth. Sometimes he would have no clothes at all. He lived in a little bamboo shelter. That's all you can call it, really. Just a little bamboo shelter. And when someone once presented him with a quilt, he put it on top. He didn't use it to wrap himself. He couldn't do that. He wanted nothing to do with the affairs of the material world. No enjoyment whatsoever. And they said to him, "How will you keep warm?" And he said, "When the cold air comes and sees the quilt on top of my bamboo shelter, it will run away frightened." This was his logic. So sometimes he would go, and people always used to come to him. But we can see how his dealings with the world were by how he dealt with people. So one time a person came to him and said, "You're a Babaji, you're chanting incessantly. We know that you know, you're very devoted to Radharani." There was one song that he used to like to sing about Radharani, written by Raghunath Das Goswami. Actually, I should say that one person came to him and said, "What is the secret of, can you tell me the secret of life? You know, the meaning of life." And he said, "Yes, the meaning of life you will find in two books." He said, "You can go into the marketplace. The meaning of life can be had for," and then he mentioned a price, a few paisa. He said, "One of them is Prema Bhakta, Prema Bhakti Chandrika, and the other one is Prema Vivarta? No. Prarthana, Prarthana." He said, "If you read these two books," he said, "you'll know everything. You'll know everything." So then people would come and they would inquire. And one time a person came and said, "Can you tell me something about the eightfold divisions of Krishna's Leela in Vrindavan?" Because there was at that time a very popular form of Raghunuga Bhakti involving the meditation at different times of day on what Krishna was doing at that time of day. And this particular type of, sometimes that is authentic, but then someone had added something to it. And the something that they added to it was where you not only meditate on Krishna, but you meditate on yourself serving Krishna, and you imagine that you've already attained that particular form. Not only that, but the guru tells you at initiation what is your form, how you're dressed, what is your age, what is your coloring, what your service is for Krishna, etc. like that. They call that the Ekadas Bhava, the 11 symptoms of your spiritual existence. So this was started by, what was his name? I forget his name, but he was the disciple of Hemlata Thakurani, who was the daughter of Srinivas Acharya, correct? So from him came a disciplic, and that proved to be very popular with people. So sometimes people, thinking that this is what Gaurakishore Das Babaji could give them, they used to ask him about that. And his reply was, he said, actually, you just chant the holy name incessantly. And if you chant the holy name incessantly, Nam Prabhu, who is none other than Krishna himself, he will come and he will reveal to you at the time when it is ready for you to hear, what is your service, what is your form, what is your dress, what is your name. He said, these things will all be revealed to you. And sometimes newlyweds used to come to him for a blessing. So usually the Swamiji, when he's asked to give a blessing to the newlyweds, at least he smiles. And he says, I hope you will be very happy, and I bless you to have a happy married life. And remember, when they came to Gaurakishore Das Babaji, he said, how will you find happiness? He said, if you're living here in the holy dham as a married couple, how will you ever find happiness? You see, she's cooking for you, and by her palatable dishes, you will be able to enjoy. And you will be convinced that I can enjoy in the holy dham of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. How is that possible? So then he blessed another couple. They used to keep coming to him, these newlyweds. They came to him and they said, and of course you should know that the Indian custom is that sometimes the wife, well, generally speaking, the wife will never eat until the husband has finished his meal. Okay? It wasn't, you know, the sort of, well, we're all equal. We're all equal is a modern invention, which we could do without, but it seems to have infiltrated in our Krishna conscious culture. We will wait maybe 2-3 generations for actual culture to descend upon us. Please forgive me, because I had a long conversation last night with over the internet with a young man who was trying to suggest to me that I should give this morning's class wearing a suit and tie. I said, why would I do that? He said, because you have to create a revolution within ISKCON, that the dhoti and the kurta is not essential for preaching, and that it's actually putting people off, and that Prabhupada never asked for it, etc., etc. He gave all his arguments. He said, I said, well, where will you draw the line? He said, no line. He said, I said, well, on the altar? He said, yes. He said, why not? Because he was a little revolutionary, but I had to tell him that some things are sacred. I said, well, maybe in the future we'll be able to do that. I said, but we also have a tradition to maintain. He said, well, tradition is just killing our movement. Anyway, that's a long discussion. But so anyway, you should know that the wife sometimes takes the remnants of the husband. And in this way, she feels happy. So when Gaurakishore Das Babaji was approached by this newlywed young couple, he said something to them which was a complete reversal of Vedic culture. He said that actually, in order for you to stay humble, he pointed his finger at the husband, he said, for you to stay fixed in your devotion and not become proud as a result of your beautiful young wife serving you, he said, you should wait till she finishes her meal and then you should eat her remnants. Of course, he was shocked. There's something shocking, you see, for the husband to eat the wife's remnants is a shocking thing. But this is what he said. Because he was concerned about even one tiny thing contributing to pride. You see, sometimes when we become initiated or we're devotees for some time, we think Pride cannot touch me now. You see, I have Tilak, I have a seeker, I have a guru, and I have my service, and I chant my rounds every day. Therefore, pride is not touching me, cannot touch me, I'm safe. You see. But when Prabhupada went before the altar, and he was praying a prayer in front of the deities in Los Angeles, and they asked him afterwards, Srila Prabhupada, may we ask what you were praying to Krishna for? And Prabhupada said, I was simply praying, I do not fall down. And this is Prabhupada. I'm simply praying, I do not fall down. This should be everyone's prayer. Krishna, please. Raghunath Das Goswami, what did he say? Pride. When a devotee becomes proud, he said it is like the urine of a donkey. It's like the donkey urine. Just as you wouldn't want to get splashed by the urine of a donkey, you should not want to get splashed by pride. So therefore, effective measures have to be put in place never to become proud with what you're wearing. So we wear something very simple. Okay? Never get proud at your hairstyle. Do not be proud of long hair, beautiful hair, but also do not be proud of a shaved head. There's one of the upper sampradayas, the only regulative principle they have is that the men shave their heads. And that they're very proud of. You see? So shaving a head in and of itself is not, you know, you cannot be said that will remove your pride. Only removal of pride will remove pride. But in Gaur Kishore Das Babaji's life, we see clothing, zero. Food, just what he could get by begging, and then sometimes nothing. Prestige, anyone who came to and wanted to be his follower, he'd give them a hard time. Give them a hard time. Any time a person wanted to be associated with him, one time a rich landowner, or a person who'd been a rich landowner, who had become a Babaji, and he came with a young disciple, and he thought that they thought they wanted to have a meeting between the two great Babajis, because sometimes there are documented accounts of these Babajis meeting, and they would touch each other's feet, and then they would embrace, and the embrace would last for 6 hours, and they would be weeping, and they would get such ecstasy just by one pure devotee meeting another pure devotee. So sometimes the disciples used to get one Babaji to meet another Babaji and see, you know, what happens. So they brought this man, and this man was in so much ecstasy, he was trembling, he could hardly walk, or so the follower said. And he was brought to him, and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, my advice to you, young man, is to immediately leave this imposter. He really insulted him. He really insulted him. Another time someone came and they brought him some sweets. And he said, these sweets, I can see that they've been made by people who cook and eat fish. And he said, how can I possibly accept this? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not accept food from a person, firstly, who eats fish, and secondly, even if that person is a pure vegetarian and wants to enjoy the food after offering it, Lord Chaitanya will not accept that food he will not accept that food. He said, if there's any tinge of lust when we offer the food to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will not accept it. So palatable dishes, no. And he said, if you take a banana skin and you take away the skin of an eggplant and you boil them with no salt, he said, this will become Mahaprasadam, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be so pleased to see your detachment that he will turn this into Mahaprasadam for you, because your very detachment is your offering to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then, Jai Shri Prabhu. So then, one time someone came to him and he said, can you tell me something more about Krishna? is in Krishna's pastimes. That's where we were, wasn't it? He said, you come back. He said, pore, pore, you come back later. Come back later. He came to him. He came back later. And he said, oh, come back later, pore. And he came back later and he said, pore, come back later. And this is polite Bengali for saying, no, I can't tell you anything about Krishna. So, but when Bhaktivinoda Thakur told, yes, one time Gaurakishore Das Babaji was, there was an old toilet and he was going there to chant. And they asked him, why are you chanting here, Babaji Maharaj? He said, so that I will not be bothered. So I'll not be bothered. He wanted to be in the Dham. One time he heard of, someone came to him and said, Babaji Maharaj, I'm a new Babaji. And he said, I'm a new Babaji. I've just come to Navadvip to live as a Babaji. He said, live? Where are you living? He said, oh, there is one man, and he has purchased 3/4 of an acre of the local Rani. He said, how is that possible? How can a Rani own Chintamani Dham? This is Chintamani Dham. How can you buy a piece of Navadvip? This is the spiritual world. You think that ordinary rupees can buy a piece of the spiritual world? And then how can he buy it for you? You see, one who thinks that he can own land in the Dham doesn't understand what the Dham is. See, so in this way, he was just crushing everybody's slightest attachment. So anyway, there are so many other stories, but when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati came to him at the request of his father to chant, to be initiated. He said, oh, come back later and we'll talk about it. And he tried to put it and push him off. He said, later, 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 later. And then he said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, oh, my father said this, I can't go home, you must initiate me. He said, all right. He said, let me go and see what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. And if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that you can be initiated by me, then... Because he didn't have any disciples, you see. He didn't take any disciples. So then he came back and he said, Maharaj, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu say? He said, oh, I forgot to ask him. But eventually he initiated him and he gave him the name Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das. So that's the name, Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, servant of Radharani. So at that time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living in Sukhada Kunj. You've probably all been there. It's over the river. If you draw a straight line between the ISKCON Goshala in Mayapur and the river, just over the river is the place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was living, and he built himself a house there, Swarup Gunj, and he was living there, and at the bottom of his garden he had a tulsi area, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji used to come. And they would discuss. Bhagavatam. Our line likes to discuss Bhagavatam. Bhaktivinoda Thakur would discuss Bhagavatam with Jagannath Das Babaji. Also, Jagannath Das Babaji was a great Bhagavatam speaker. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji was the grand disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, and they used to discuss Bhagavatam. And he would sit in the garden and he would chant. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur built a small shed for him. And he chanted in there for at least 7 years. Every day he would come there and he would chant there for 7 years. So I always used to go to that place. And I just used to think of Gaurakishore Das Babaji chanting in that small brick shed. And how each and every brick was soaked in the, you know, the pure sound vibration of the holy name. And then, 1 year I went back and they'd completely knocked down that shed. It was gone completely. There are two conceptions. One is, let's keep the surroundings of the great Acharya. And one is, let's worship him by building a big colored concrete temple. So that's what they did. So then I, went and I found out where those bricks were, and I went and I reclaimed some of those bricks because they just thrown them away. And I say, these are the bricks from the shed where Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj chanted for 7 years nonstop. I said, you can't just throw those bricks away. And so I went and I got them. So I would like you to just touch them to your forehead and enjoy the Shakti. Someone can come and get one. One for the men, one for the ladies. So they were being used actually as a as hardcore. They're being used as hardcore for something else. And I got there just before they poured cement on them. So it was, I was meant to be there. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was initiated in 1900. And then he went to live in Navadvip. And of course, you know the story that... what year did Gaurakishore Das Babaji pass away? 1914, 1915, like that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he had two great examples in his life. One was his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a great preacher, publisher, etc. And the other was Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who was a great renunciate and a great retired from the world. So he decided to follow the path of his guru first, and he sat in one place, also with a bamboo hut, and he chanted for 6 years? 6 years? 6 years. He chanted how many rounds a day? Over 100 rounds a day. And he chanted and chanted and chanted. And sometimes the rain used to come in, and he carried on chanting. I think he had one umbrella, and he was just to sit there and chant. This was his bhakti, following in the line of his guru. And then one day, the story goes that he saw a scrap of paper, and on that scrap of paper was written something that impelled him to become a preacher. And then his life changed, and he became a preacher and began his movement, his Gaudiya movement. But of course, when his Guru Maharaj departed, the Babaji Brotherhood, if you like, who really were, if there was any organization that Gaurakishore Das Babaji was a member of, it was the the sort of Babaji Brotherhood that was there in Navadvip at the time. There was not a group of disciples to come and claim the body and build a samadhi, etc. They were already contemplating on following Gaurakishore Das Babaji's last request, which was that his body should be dragged through the streets of Navadvip, so that all the dust of the holy dham would be put on his body. And they were preparing to do that. And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati went there and he said, I have come to claim the body of my guru. None of you is fit to claim. and there was a big commotion, shouting on both sides, because the other Babajis were thinking, if Gaur Kishordas Babaji is buried in our part of Navadvip, then it will become a very famous tirtha, and people will come and their rupees will, you know, accrue to us. Everybody wants to have the famous Babaji in their backyard, as it were, you know. Prabhupada told us, he said, you'd be very careful because my godbrothers will start trying to claim that you are their follower. And that's why he always avoided going even to his Guru Maharaj's samadhi. And his godbrothers used to complain, why don't you go to Prabhupada's samadhi, our Guru Maharaj's samadhi? But Prabhupada's private reason was that if he regularly paid his obeisances there, then each and every one of Prabhupada's followers from all over the world, when they came to Mayapur, would go to the Chaitanya Mat and make it a regular thing. And he was concerned because they would always claim that, just see, there. And now if you go there, on the wall is painted, it says the Chaitanya Mat, the fountainhead of the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So those people want the claim that the most powerful saint, you know, now you go to Vrindavan, I knew Prabhupada. Prabhupada was my friend. I knew him. He came to my house and had lunch. I said, now the stories just carry on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you see. Actually, most of them told Prabhupada, what are you doing going west? You see, that's not a good thing. Sannyasis shouldn't cross water. You're going to die in America. You see, but now everybody knows Prabhupada. Everybody knew him. You know, he's my Shiksha Guru. He's my, you know, I know Prabhupada. You don't. These claims are there. So they wanted the body of Gaur Kishordas Babaji in order to claim, yes, he's a Babaji. He was one of us. He's very special. We knew him. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said that none of you are fit to claim my Guru Maharaj. So then the chief of police came along. And he said, hello, 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 what's going on here? And so, oh, you know, this is happening and this is happening, this is claiming. So then he said, well, what's your story? And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, anyone who has not had illicit sex in the last 6 months, he said, you come here and you claim his body. And no one moved. He said, 3 months. 1 month, in the last 3 days, you see. And no one came forward, and there was a lot of fidgeting, and people started moving away because they knew that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a pure person. The account at the time said he just radiated. You know, people could look in his eyes and see this person. And so the samadhi was in one place. And then some years later, the rain came and flooded the river, and it washed the samadhi, began crumbling, falling into the river. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was alerted, and he came there, and he took his spiritual master's remains and reinterred them in the Chaitanya Mat that he had established, which is just up the road from the Yoga Pit. And so this was his headquarters, and you can go there today and you can see the murti of Gaur Kishordas Babaji and take his blessings. So today is his disappearance day, and we pray on this day. We pray in many ways. There's no breakfast, is there? The thing is, I forgot to bring my glasses. And I just wanted to read to you, but I will need someone to help me. We can sing the following prayer, though. Nama Gaura Kishoraya Shakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralamba Rasambode Padambujaya Te Namaha. I bow to your lotus feet, Srila Gaur Kishordas Babaji, the embodiment of renunciation, and the ocean of sacred rapture in separation. This is an interesting book that's got some. You can also find on the internet, you can also find a translation of an article, 12-page article, at least on one particular website. It's a 12-page article written by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur about his Guru Maharaj, which has been translated, and there's some nice details there. But I would like... if someone with a... just to take it in turns to read... six teachings of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, and then we can conclude. Can I ask six of you to read this? Those of you who've got good eyesight, I'll give you this book. And anybody seen this book? This is a helpful book. It's just the teachings. It's just one, nice and loud.
Babaji Maharaj's teachings. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Thakur recounted some events from Gaurakishore Das Babaji's life that are full of import for the practitioner of devotional life. First, on one occasion, a certain Babaji came to visit Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji with some of his followers in tow. These
acolytes
began glorifying their gurus to Babaji Maharaj. Our Prabhu is so merciful. He takes so much trouble to travel from place to place to deliver food. Fallen souls, if he didn't travel, we would be the destiny of those forsaken places. Babaji Maharaj immediately became and answered, if someone makes a pretense of delivering the world when in fact he is only interested in making money and garnering prestige, he not only does no one any good but falls down for having cheated others.
Champ.
One day a few devotees were describing the expertise of Babaji.
Louder.
One day a few devotees were describing the expertise of a particular lecturer on the Bhagavad. Babaji Mahasaya knew that this individual received money for his service. He said, this fellow does not explain the Bhagavad or the scriptures of Babaji.
He is simply speaking on the sense gratification. He is simply speaking on the sense gratificatory scriptures. He isn't chanting Gaura Gaura or Krishna Krishna, but money money. It has nothing to do with bhajan. The end result is that the true Vaishnava religion is obscured. Nothing good can come from it. Indeed, the world will be harmed by such preaching.
One day, Babaji Mahasaya was chanting japa late at night when he suddenly jumped up and exclaimed, did you see that? Did you see? A professional speaker on the Bhagavat has gone to Prabhana district and has just made a chaste widow break her vows. What a shame. These rascals are giving Mahaprabhu's religion a bad name. He spoke as if he were personally witnessing the event.
The owner of the Navadvip Dharmashala was a certain Girish Babu. One day his wife offered to build a cottage for Babaji Maharaj. He answered, I have no problem sleeping under the straw shelter on a boat. The only problem I have is that so many rascals are constantly coming to me asking me to bless them. They disturb my chanting. They don't really want my blessings because they don't really want, I suppose that should be, no, what is best for them. But still, they come to disrupt my chanting the holy name. If you give me your brick outhouse, I will be able to chant in peace. No one will come to bother me there. When he realized that Babaji Maharaj was serious, Girish Babu immediately had the outhouse purified with cow dung and brought in the mason to completely redo the building.
One day during the cold season, a devotee made a gift of a quilt to Babaji Mahashaya. But rather than wrapping himself in it, he simply draped it over the tiny bamboo shelter under which he slept. When asked why he did that, he answered that the cold would go away simply upon seeing the quilt.
Mm.
One day, the Raja of Kosimbazar, Sri Mandira Chandra Nandi Bahadur, invited Babaji Maharaj to his palatial residence for a Vaishnava assembly. Babaji Mahashaya answered, "If you want my association, leave all your riches and come and live under a bamboo shelter like mine. You won't have to worry about food. I will beg enough to feed the both of us. If I go to stay in your palace, I won't be long before I start desiring to enjoy sense gratification. I will start thinking about how I can accumulate a property for myself. Then before you know it, I will become your enemy. If you want to preserve our friendship, and if you wish to be kind to me as your Vaishnava friend, then you will come to the Dham and join me in worshipping the Lord and eating Madhukari."
Thank you. There is finally, in conclusion, there's another account when you can see how difficult it was for people to come to Gaurakishore Das Babaji and receive instruction, because he would immediately go to the heart of their attachment, and it's always painful for someone to do that. Prabhupada's example is that sometimes the doctor, when confronted with a boil, has to not blow on the boil, but take a surgical instrument and cut the boil to relieve the pressure. That's the example that Prabhupada gave from his own Guru Maharaj. And so blowing on a boil will not do any good. So Prabhupada said the guru is a sadhu, and the sadhu's business is to cut when you have some problem. And one of the names given to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by Kavi Karnapur is Shlata Sandhi. Shlata Sandhi means that Lord Chaitanya has come to loosen the knots. He's a knot loosener. We are very knotted to the material world. And Lord Chaitanya comes to loosen up those knots, to free us from the binding power of this world. And so the guru who represents Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he will not be a flatterer. He will be a person who goes to the heart of the difficulties that you have and deal with that attachment that you have in order to help you to the next level. So if he's prepared to do that, you have to be prepared to do the other thing. You have to be prepared to say, "Gurudev, I have a boil." You see, that's the other half of the patient-doctor contract. If the doctor's fulfilling his contract to deal with your pain, you have to tell him where the pain is. You see, but mutual flattery will not result in a guru-disciple relationship. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji, one time when reflecting about the people's difficulty to listen to really good instruction, helpful instruction, he said, "Yes, He said if a man's wife or a man's daughter give him difficulties in that relationship for years and years and years, still the man will tolerate the daughter or the wife saying things that are not palatable for him to hear. He said, but if the guru just once says something about a fault that the disciple has, he says, then the disciple will not ever again go to be with the guru and listen. You see? He was lamenting that people have such a difficult time. And we have to be very careful because for as much as Prabhupada was kind and affectionate, he was also very commanding, demanding, chastising, rebuking, correcting. This is not another side of Prabhupada. It is the full complement. We may see it as different. And therefore people, when they have a picture of Prabhupada in their homes, they may have a Prabhupada picture, a picture of Prabhupada, smiling or singing or being soft or looking at a flower or something like that. But beware that do not reconstruct the Prabhupada that you would have liked to have met. You know, to understand that Prabhupada could be as Gaurakishordas Babaji was and as his own Guru Maharaj was, hard as a thunderbolt, as well as being soft as a rose. And unfortunately, sometimes today, disciples who become initiated in our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they really like to be treated like roses all the time. And they like the guru to be like a rose. And then they leave aside the fact that the guru sometimes has to reprove, correct, rebuke, chastise. These things have to be done. So then it falls upon the local devotee who actually sees the disciple from time to time to time to time to actually make the correction. But this sets up a dichotomy, because then the disciple thinks, my guru would never speak to me like that. Of course, the disciple only sees the guru once every year. And then it's a very nice meeting, because the guru has to be the place of last resort, if you like, the last shelter. It has to be like the birch tree, the silver birch tree on the way up to the Himalayas, the very last tree. Way above the tree line, you'll find this solitary silver birch, and it's the last tree to give you shelter on your way up the Himalayas. So sometimes the disciple needs the guru to be the last person to give ashraya. But at the same time, if gurus do not correct their disciples, then the disciples will grow up crooked. And if the disciple in the same way doesn't allow the local Vaishnavas, senior persons, to correct them in the name of my guru would never speak to me like that, then we have a whole movement full of crooked people. So this is something I'm not suggesting that, I'm not putting myself forward to be the one who will do the correction, because you have to be pretty straight if you want to correct someone else. But just accept this as a principle in spiritual life that was exemplified in the life of Gaurakishordas Babaji. And from time to time, we need to hear something about ourselves which will be painful, you see. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that those persons who speak to me like this, they are my true friends. Those who flatter me, they're not my friends. But those who correct me, they are my true friends. So if we think of Gaurakishordas Babaji Maharaj today, we should think of this extreme renunciation, completely devoted to Lord Chaitanya, serving in separation from Srimati Radharani. One of his favorite songs is a beautiful song to Radharani. And there was one particular song that he sang, and he said, the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness is in that song. That's also mentioned in that book. And it was a song, again, in which the singer corrects himself, saying, why have I willingly drunk poison? Why have I not taken to the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Why have I become deviated with all sorts of different enjoyment within this world? Why have I behaved like this? Why have I given myself only sorrow? So that is Gaurkishore Das Babaji's mood. And he is where he is in our Guru Parampara for a very strategic reason. And therefore, it behooves anyone in the life of representing the Guru Parampara, as we all do as preachers, to, from time to time, to issue what might be tough talk. But if you issue tough talk after a prolonged period of affectionate dealings with someone, then they will listen to you. You see? When George Harrison, after being very affectionately dealt with by Shamsunda and others for some period, he criticized Prabhupada. He said something that was, you know, a direct criticism of Prabhupada's motivation in preaching Krishna consciousness. And at that point, Shamsunda just took hold of his lapels on George Harrison's coat, and he pushed him up against the wall, and he said, "Don't you ever speak about my spiritual master like that." You know, and he left the room, and George left the room, and then George came back later, and he said, "Well, I can see you're not after me money. Because if you're after me money, you wouldn't have treated me like that." So George actually became very convinced that the devotees were being real with him, because they weren't they didn't want to flatter him, because he was surrounded by people who flattered him. And here was someone who just told him like it was, "You've said something wrong now. You shouldn't have offended the pure devotee." You see. And I think it's something that sometimes we may do with each other, or these days we may do it over the internet, but we may not do it with a person. You see, it's the very opposite of flattery. If you're trying to get someone's affection, you'll flatter them. If you're trying to get someone's money, you'll flatter them. If you're trying to just keep a disciple in Krishna consciousness, there's a tendency to flatter them. But really what everybody needs is a good stiff talking to occasionally. That's Krishna sets the standard for that. We call it confrontational counseling. It's not the unique preserve of the therapists, but it's a conversational technique, and sometimes it's required. Yeah. Jayatirtha, when he was here, told us a story of coming into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada was singing, and he had to play cartels along with Prabhupada. And so he was accompanying Prabhupada, and Prabhupada stopped him. He said, "You're playing too fast." So then Jayatirtha slowed down, and he said, "Now you're playing too slow. Can you not even play the cartels?" And at that point, he just felt completely crushed. You see, because previously Prabhupada had glorified him. He said, "Such nice, you know, wife is the goddess of fortune. You're doing wonderful work here. Spiritual sky incense. Wonderful, 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 wonderful." And then just to balance it, Prabhupada said, "Can you not even play the cartels?" You see. Now, it's not that the guru does that because he wants to play with the disciple's mind and he's having some entertainment from that. But actually it's a corrective measure, you know, so that the disciple does not grow up crooked. So from time to time we need to either read something not helpful about ourselves, or hear something not helpful about ourselves. Not too much. We don't want you to get depressed. But occasionally, just when pride is beginning to come in, we need to hear something that brings us down to earth. Otherwise we become a mutual flattery society, which many spiritual organizations do, and that's not helpful at all. ISKCON remains strong because we have genuine spiritual life. And where that genuine spiritual life is not happening, then people become weak. So that transaction always has to be there between the senior to the junior, the teacher to the student, the guru to the disciple. And in this way, everybody can move forward. So that are a few of my reflections on the unique contribution of someone known as Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj in our parampara. And that is why when we look at our parampara, we should not gloss over Gaurakishore Das Babaji, you see, but we should see him as having made a unique contribution. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I guess there's no questions. All right, those of you who need to go, there's no breakfast either. Unless you want to go into the village of Lechmore Heath and beg some rice, and then you can have it with some banana skins, which Parashuram will supply for you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj ki jai.